Okay, so for the last seminar of this spring session, we have Yuri Lewandowski, who will speak about the frequently asked questions of loop quantum cosmology.
Thank you for the introduction. Loop quantum cosmology is for me a testing ground for loop quantum gravity. So numerical results predicted by loop quantum cosmology cannot be really trusted. However, qualitative observations are very likely to pass to the full theory. We know already the most relevant, the most important result, which is the bounce, which replaces the Big Bang. So I will discuss some other properties of loop quantum cosmology which are best known. And this is where my title comes from, unfrequently asked questions. So these are questions which I haven't seen people discussing too much. So I think it's good to focus on that today. So on the page number 2, there is the list of questions. The first one is quantum space-time according to loop quantum cosmology. So I will raise the question, what actually is the space-time which emerges from the quantum cosmology? The second question contains a typo, but there will be more typos in my transparency. Unfortunately, this is the first one. So what is the status of the kinematical quantum geometry in loop quantum cosmology? We know that we solve constraints and the physical Hilbert space is different than kinematical Hilbert space. So what survives, what passes from the kinematical quantum geometry to the physical system. Question number 3, where is the cell? We use cell to construct the loop quantum cosmology model of open universe. So where is the cell? In topic number 4, I would like to draw attention to the case when the physical Hamiltonian, which governs the evolution of the universe according to loop quantum cosmology, it has discrete spectrum. This case is known. It was I used results of Tomasz Pawłowski. However, I still think we should maybe stop for a moment at this case and maybe realize that there exists such example when the spectrum of the Hamiltonian is discrete. There are eigenstates, normalizable eigenstates, and there is a bound state, like in quantum hydrogen atom, for instance. The topic number 5, it doesn't mean that there are true or false solutions to the constraint. I rather mean that there are different ways of posing the constraint, the quantum constraint, and I would like to compare some aspects related to those different formulations of the constraint using recent results on the jointness of the constraint operator. Let us move to page number 3, quantum space-time. So classically, the space-time which we are talking about is homogeneous isotropic, Robertson-Walker, and it's coupled with the homogeneous scalar field, phi. And there is only one constraint left to be solved, which is equation number 2. And in this constraint, I use integrated variables. So phi is the conjugate momentum to the scalar field momentum, conjugated phi, which is integrated along some fixed finite region. This region is either the whole of sigma in the case when sigma is compact, or it's some arbitrarily, well, not arbitrarily, but it's some fixed cell. At this point, it's fixed arbitrarily. And V is the physical volume of this cell. So we can introduce such variables already on the classical level, and on this slide, everything is classical. Okay, now we quantize. So first we quantize kinematically. And the scalar field comes with the scalar field Hilbert space. Gravitational degrees of freedom are expressed
by... You're on the next slide, right?
Yes. Now we move to slide number 4. So there are two Hilbert spaces. One Hilbert space of the gravitational degrees of freedom, which is just the volume, and the first Hilbert space is the space of Hilbert space of scalar field degrees of freedom, which is the scalar field, and the operators are quantized in equation 4, and the quantum constraint reads as in equation 5. So we know from Abai, Ashtekar, Pawlowski, and Singh that this constraint equation takes the form of some evolution equation, so we can think of the physical state as solutions of some evolving vectors in the Hilbert space of the gravitational degrees of freedom. They are evolving according to the equation 5. In the space of those solutions, so it looks very much like Schrödinger quantum mechanics, so we know what to do. In this space, we know how to deal with operators, even if operators are not preserved by the time evolution, we know that they make sense and evolve according to the Heisenberg picture, or there is a more elegant way of defining those operators just by saying that operator is labeled by extra by instant of phi, telling us when it was applied. And the momentum operator, the field momentum operator, now is actually re-expressed. Before it was commuting with volume, now it becomes it's expressed by the physical Hamiltonian which governs the evolution in equation 5. Okay, let us move to page number 5. Knowing what are the quantum operators representing our geometry, let us go back to the question. And let us see what do we know about the metric tensor. Okay, so let us try to write it as before. The first part is still unknown. We'll have to work on this. The second part is actually already taken care of. So we replace the scale factor by the volume, and this is what we've got. Okay, so we have to. Actually, this is the main subject of this question. What about this physical time? What is the third term in equation 8? So the quotation mark means that this is a heuristic formula. We have to give sense to this formula. Okay, so what we have to do, we just have to write this metric tensor classically, go back to classical theory, and write it in terms of phi. So we have to choose. For the instead of arbitrary time, let us choose phi. Knowing the equation of motion of phi, which we take into account in equation 9, we calculate what is the physical time interval, which is n times dt. We express it by v, t, and phi. So now it's clear how to quantize. We just replace v and phi by the hat. By the operators, and use the explicit formula of phi. Okay? Now there is some ambiguity. I will go back to this ambiguity on the next slide, because now v and phi don't commute, so we have to work actually a little to give some sense to this formula. But if we do it, then the physical time between two instants of phi, between phi 1 and phi 2, is given by the formula 11. This is the physical phi. Okay? So, in conclusion, we have the formula for the space-time metric tensor, not only for this space-like part, but also for this time part. Now, as I mentioned, there is this ordering ambiguity. However, we can notice that actually this lapse, because actually this factor which is in front of phi squared is a lapse, is a new lapse function corresponding to the choice of time. But actually this lapse...
Jerry, we don't hear you.
Oh, okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so this lapse function is related to the... to the energy, matter energy density in equation 14. So it's actually the inverse of the energy density, of the matter density. But we know that people working on loop quantum cosmology can define the operator of quantum density. So, okay, the ambiguity is of the same level as in the definition of the energy density. Perhaps we can choose the same ordering as in the case of the energy density. I'm not sure if there is any reason to use a different ordering. This is the one we can use. Now, here I discussed the case of homogeneous isotropic universe, but I have checked that if we consider homogeneous non-isotropic case, then all the calculations exactly go through and we get the same result. A non-trivial question is how those results can be generalized to full quantum gravity. But I believe that at least in the case of Brown-Kuchar mechanism, those extra dust fields, it should work in a similar way. And I think this is what Christina Eagle told me recently. Okay, so this is the end of the first part. So if there are any comments or questions, this is a good moment to make them or to ask.
Jörg?
Yes?
This is Jonathan Engel.
Hi.
I have a question. The classically, the time between phi 1 and phi 2 is proportional to the difference between the two, yes?
Well, classically, it would be integral of the Laplace function.
Okay. I thought one of the reasons phi was used as a clock was that it had a linear evolution in time or something like that. Well, it was just a side question. It was not very...
Okay, it's true that it has linear evolution, but in different times.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so if we can move to the next slide, number seven. Okay, so what is the status of the kinematical quantum geometry? Okay, so let us go back to the constraint. So let us see what we did. So we wrote this constraint in this form as in equation number 15. And we assumed, because I didn't show you the detail, that the second term is a well-defined self-adjoint operator, a symmetric operator, in the Hilbert space of the gravitational degrees of freedom only. And now, how to achieve this? So, for instance, equation number 16 is gives you a recipe how we can define this operator such that it's really symmetric. The faculty is that here, that in fact, in loop quantum cosmology, we use, instead of volume here, we use the inverse of the operator corresponding to inverse volume. But at this point, it doesn't matter, so I just let you know about this subtlety, but I don't implement it in my formula. So now, if we make this choice, then it's true that we just have Schrödinger quantum mechanics in the own kinematical Hilbert space of gravitational degrees of freedom. So every self-adjoint operator in this Hilbert space, which we think of operator representing quantum geometry, passes to a self-adjoint operator which has to be assigned to some instant of time, and it can be used in the space of the physical space. And we know that this observation can be generalized to the full gravity, and that it is also true in the case of Brown-Kuchar dust. Okay, let us move to page number 8. Okay, however, in the original Ashtekar-Pawlowski Sink model, this operator, this part of the scalar constraint operator, is defined in a different way. It's just a straight product of the two operators. Modulo is inverse of inverse, but it's just a simple product of P and P. So this product is not symmetric. Okay, so what we do in that model, what APS do, they modify appropriately the scalar product such that this operator becomes symmetric. So they modify the scalar product in the kinematic algebra space of the gravitational degrees of freedom to make the operator from equation 17 still symmetric, even though it doesn't look symmetric. Okay, so now what is true, that still every operator which is a function of the volume operator passes to this new Hilbert space and its spectrum is not affected. However, the holonomy operators don't commute with volume operators, so they don't pass unchanged to this new Hilbert space. So this is a subtlety, that in this previous choice from the previous transparency, actually all the operators, both holonomies and volumes, pass to the space of pass unchanged to the space of the physical solutions, whereas in this case, only volume passes. So the physical argument is that in this, to describe the system, we don't need so many operators, that actually volume and energy density is exactly what we need to describe the system, so why should we worry about some overcomplete set of observables? However, this is a difference, and I would like to emphasize that it exists. Okay, so this is the end of this topic, and if somebody has some comments or questions, please make it now.
Yeah, Jurek, I have a comment.
Okay.
Which is just that there is a fundamental ambiguity about the choice of laps. I mean, we don't know what choice should be used. The way it was done in the APS papers is that we classically use the laps equal to 1, which is to say that we use proper time. This was what Jonathan was implicitly assuming. And we use this proper time classically, then go to quantum theory. And in quantum theory, then we look at the constraint equation and notice that phi is playing the role of time. And therefore, at the quantum level, we try to make a switch, or we make a switch to phi as time, which corresponds to choosing a different lapse there.
Right.
But one could also just say that I'm going to do this really at the classical level, namely write the theory at the classical level in terms of scalar field as time. So that corresponds to a different lapse. And with this choice of lapse, the factor ordering is again somewhat different. And the last problem point that you use, that you emphasized up here, is changed. That is to say, you don't have to multiply on the equation that you had, which is equation 17. Namely, we don't have to do any of those things. I mean, if seek gravitational is coming from this new lapse, then one just obtains a very simple equations. There is no problem about having to change the inner product again. I just wanted to just mention that, I mean, just as a side remark. So there are many...
But I understand that in this case, the scalar constraint is different.
Yes, the overall scalar constraint is different, right?
I see. So is it like in the equation 15? Or in the equation 16 as well?
No, I think without a blackboard, it's a very simple point, but without a blackboard, it's very technical, so we can just go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. So, if there are no more comments, let us move to page number 9. Okay, so we know that the loop quantum cosmology relies on choice of some cells, especially in the flat case or in open case. Okay, so let us look from the point of view of realistic world. Suppose we are living in the universe which is described by the APS loop quantum cosmology model. How do we find the cell? Where is the cell? Okay, so let us take any region, this may be the classroom, any region U, and suppose that we can somehow experimentally check what are the properties of the volume operator, of the corresponding volume operator. So let us study this volume operator. And then we are going to find if this model is correct. And here is another type. Okay, so equation number 19, the formula number 19, it should be the spectrum of this operator. So everything is correct except that this second term, which is proportional to square root of delta, should be multiplied by n. And n ranges all the natural and negative numbers. So n ranges all the integers. I'm sorry for this mistake. Okay, but all the spectrum is multiplied by overall factor lambda. And this factor lambda, okay, and then there are more terms. So there's this overall factor lambda, which depends on the choice of the region. The first term is a constant term, which comes from the super-selected sector. So so we have some super-selected sectors, and each sector is labeled by arbitrary number epsilon, and in this sector, this is the spectrum of the volume operator. And the second term proportional to... Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So, capital delta is the area gap, which is the smallest non-zero area.
Jurek, can you speak louder?
Actually, I think so, I will try to speak louder. Okay, so now what we can do is, what we should do is we should find a region for which lambda equals 1. If we find a region for which, we just look for this region by changing by subdividing capital U or by taking a little bigger region. And once we find U for which lambda is 1, then it means that this is the cell which was used in this quantum model. To do it, we need to know the area gap. If we don't know the area gap, then the information about the area gap is also contained in the density operator. So we can, in principle, if the model is correct, we can read it from the density operator. So this is the answer for the question, where is this elementary cell, how to find it. Now, what follows from this answer? So what follows is that actually in the flat case, there is a unique loop quantum cosmology model. So it doesn't matter how we choose this cell originally in constructing this model, we will always...
Slide 10, right?
Oh, yes. We move to slide number 10. So regardless of the choice of this cell, we always end up defining the same unique quantum model and if we use physical state, then appropriate map between... So if we choose, if somebody uses different cell and it produces a different model, then there is a unitary map which maps one model into the other model and all the operators into the other operator. Okay, this is true in the flat case. However, if we consider a closed case, then maybe Abai will disagree with me. However, in this case, I find that the operator which is used to describe the energy density, namely the Pius momentum operator, it consists of two parts, and the first part is the same as in the flat model, it's equation number 21 and the part theta 0, whereas the second part involves some parameter L0, and this parameter is a radius of a fixed background metric on S3. So there, we can always fix this background metric such that L0 is 2, and this is a well-defined choice. But we can always make a different choice and make L0 have a different, take different value, and then we get a non-equivalent model. So there is some ambiguity, this kind of ambiguity in the closed, in the model describing the closed universe. Okay, so in conclusion, there is a unique flat Friedman-Robertson-Walker. However, there is some ambiguity which we just solved by hand by fixing the background, the radius of background radius of the sphere to be. So this is the end of this point. If there are any comments, please.
You like, we cannot understand you.
Okay, we cannot understand my English, or we cannot.
No,
understand
no, it's too. You have to speak louder, please, or closer to the microphone, maybe.
Ah, what about now?
Yeah, it's better.
Is it worse or better?
It's better.
Okay.
Hello, Jurek, it's from here.
Yes.
You see, like, I have one comment on this. I agree that there is an ambiguity of choosing L0. But all, even if you choose different L0, your physical predictions don't change.
Well, perhaps you mean semi-classical predictions.
But no, like, for the issue. Yeah.
But quantum models will be different.
No, the energy density at which bombs occurs in the closed models will not change. So I think, like, we have to ask statements about the invariant quantity. Like, if you change L0, or if you change V0 in those models, of course, like, the observable V5 changes, but it's not it anyway has no invariant meaning in a flat model. And similarly, in the closed model, it will change. But if you ask the question about invariant quantity, none of them changes, classically or in the quantum theory.
So what I mean by different model, for me, model is a Hilbert space and some family of operators. And two models are equivalent if there is a unitary map which maps everything, all the structure of the first model into the structure of the second model. If there is no such unitary map, then they are not equivalent, but it's possible that the questions which you ask have the same answer. So it's possible that if you ask not sufficiently many questions, if you are interested only in bounds, for instance, then it may, two models may give the same answer.
And my second comment is, like, Alex and I have recently studied all these issues for the open model, and, like, our paper was out last week, so if, like, where we raise this issue of V0 in the open model, then we show that this is a unique choice for a very general class of quantization.
I see. Okay, thank you. Let us move to page number 11. Okay, so the scalar constraint depends on the cosmological constant. So it takes the form which is expressed in equation number 22. In this equation, there is again a typo in the first term, but let us ignore this term. We're interested in this middle term between the two equalities. So this term is the gravitational part of the scalar constraint, and it consists of two parts. Theta zero is this fixed part, which is the same for the flat model, and for the flat model for k equal 1. But this is the part which doesn't depend on k and doesn't depend on the cosmological constant. And there is the second term, which is proportional to the cosmological constant. And now we can see that if the cosmological constant is negative, then this term is positive. And also, we know that the term theta zero is a positive and symmetric, and actually even essentially self-adjoint operator. So, having this information, we are able to show that if lambda is less than zero, then we have the following sequence of inequalities, number 23. So, theta zero is bigger or equal zero, and on the other hand, the actual scalar constraint, theta, is bigger or equal
then theta 0. And by playing with this kind of inequalities, we can show that the full constraint, the theta, so this including the cosmological constant term, is itself further joint, its spectrum is discrete, and moreover, we have some estimate on the dimension of the Hilbert space corresponding to eigenvalues less than a fixed eigenvalue omega squared. So if we fix some omega squared and ask what is the dimension of the Hilbert space corresponding to eigenvalues less than omega squared of the theta operator, then we have inequality number 24, which gives us some estimate. So we can see that this operator is really discrete. So the conclusion is that in the case of flat Friedman-Roberts von Walker, however, with lambda less than zero, there is a ground state of the universe. This is the next, we can check. Oh, sorry, next slide, slide number 12. Okay. So we know that there is a ground state. The energy of the ground state, the energy in the sense of eigenvalue of the physical Hamiltonian, the energy of the state is bigger than zero. There are excited states labeled by some integer. And also, we know from Pawlowski's paper that the difference between two such sequence eigenvalues is for large n is approximately constant, as is given by this numerical, numerically known, as it is written in item 3. So, my question is, here I'm actually asking question rather than providing answer. What are the physical consequences? There is clear analogy with the quantum heterogeneous atom. We know that in case of quantum heterogeneous atom, the most important part for quantum mechanics is the discrete part of the spectrum, not not analysis of semi-classical states of electron in heterogeneous atom. They are not so interesting as the discrete spectrum. So why shouldn't it be so for the universe? I think we should work more on this case, and maybe there is some something relevant for physics in this discrete universe. So in my proof of discreteness, I assume that lambda was less than zero. So one can ask, what about if lambda is greater than zero? Then the arguments don't work, okay, but maybe there are some other arguments which work. And in fact, it works. So the operator is not only, we cannot prove it is self-adjoint, but it's actually not self-adjoint, and there are inequivalent self-adjoint extensions. So what it means? It means that this operator is not well-defined without an extra information. And that there is an ambiguity, so we have a class of self-adjoint extensions. Okay, let us move to page number 13. So this is the end of the discrete universe. So if there are any comments, please make them now. Okay, so let us move to page number 13. Okay, so we make a lot of study of the self-adjointness issue, and we have come to a surprising conclusion. Namely, one can also consider this original scalar constraint operator, so in equation 25 it is expressed explicitly. This operator, so we can study this operator instead of this of dividing by or multiplying by z and writing this as Schrödinger equation. We can just approach this operator directly and think of finding solutions of scalar constraint as of solving the eigenvalue problem for this operator. So the first question is this operator self-adjoint? So having this bad experience with the lambda bigger than zero case, we could think that probably here that we should encounter the same problem. However, what turns out is that this operator is always self-adjoint. So to begin with, we can simplify the study of this operator by using the pi, which commutes with
with all the operator and restricting to the eigen space of this pi operator. So pi is replaced by omega squared, as you were, and then we get operator labeled by omega. And now the statement is that this operator is always. Let us move to page number 14. So the statement is that this operator is always self-adjoint, no matter what K is, which means for open, for flat, and for closed universe, and no matter what the value of the cosmological constant is. So this operator has the following form. It consists of... So I'm talking now about equation 29. So we have the part which is independent on K and lambda, so I call it flat part, because this is the only part which is non-zero in the flat, and lambda equals zero, in Friedman-Robertson-Walker case. Then plus W is a function of the volume operator, and this term is non-zero when K is not zero, so when K is minus one on plus one, or plus one, then we have this part. And there is a part, the first term proportional to cosmological constant. Okay, so what is remarkable is that this operator is essentially self-adjoint for all values of K and all the values of lambda. And now let us see what is, so let us move to the page number 15. And I explain what is the technical reason behind what is the what mathematical fact is behind this surprising property. So now we have to get more become more specific. So let us consider the Hilbert space, which is actually the case of one of our super selective sectors. So this Hilbert space is spanned by cats, which are labeled by numbers like epsilon minus integer. So it would be epsilon, epsilon plus 1, epsilon plus 2, etc., and epsilon minus 1, epsilon minus 2, etc. And two different cats are orthogonal, and the cats themselves are normalized. Okay, so this is exactly what our Hilbert space. So now consider the operators. The first one is our volume operator. And the second one is the operator which we haven't mentioned today, but it is used intensively in all the constructions, which is the holonomy operator. It's kind of improved holonomy. And this operator is just the shift operator, small h. It just makes shift for one. Okay. And now consider the following operator, which involves arbitrary function A and arbitrary function W. And the only condition we impose on function A is the last equation on this transparency, number 15, which is actually two equations. It's telling us that certain sum with respect to negative integer numbers has to be infinite, as well as the same sum of inverse of A with respect to positive integers has to be infinite. Okay. So now the statement is that... sorry? Can you repeat?
Yeah, where is epsilon? Epsilon is a parameter in your model.
I'm sorry, I cannot.
Epsilon.
So the epsilon labels different super selected sectors. If you fix epsilon, then it defines uniquely the Hilbert, the physical Hilbert space. If you change epsilon, then this labels another super selected Hilbert space. Epsilon is not small. Epsilon is just a label. Just a number. So the statement is that this operator, up on those assumptions, is always self-adjoint, regardless of the function W. And this is exactly the function W, which in our case, in case of loop quantum cosmology, the function capital A is proportional to V, or for large V. So it satisfies this condition. and the properties of function W are just irrelevant. So this is why this theorem holds, is useful independently on the value of the cosmological constant and on the value of the small k. However, you can also see from this that if we actually change the scalar constraint, and if we took the scalar constraint in the form which is considered in the APS model, then the function A would become proportional to V squared. And then this sum, this infinite sum at the end, would be actually finite. And then we would have to look for a different criterion to prove the self-adjoint. So that's why this criterion is good only for this original scalar constraint. It's not good for the scalar constraint rescaled by V. Okay, let us move to page number 16. Okay, so now let us compare two constructions. If we write the constraint as in the APS model, then we encounter ambiguity. Okay? So we have a non-equivalent self-adjoint extension. Each extension gives us some physical Hilbert space of solution. On the other hand, if we take the second possibility, as I explained in the previous transparency, we have a unique self-adjoint operator. So there seems to be some tension between the two results. However, Kaminsky and Pawłowski are telling me that according to them, the truth is that actually all the solutions of all the possible extensions, non-equivalent extensions, should be taken into account because all of them give rise to some non-trivially different distinct solutions of the second constraint. So it seems that the conclusion, at least the conjecture's conclusion, is that we should take into account all the self-adjoint extensions to produce the full physical Hilbert space, or that there will be another super selection rule, which will, if we use the second constraint, which will reduce the full space of all the solutions to some smaller space, which will be which will correspond to the solutions of the, to one of the extensions of the first scalar constraint. So it's not clear for me which conclusion is correct. So once again, the first conclusion would be that we should take all the solutions given by all the self-adjoint extensions and build from them the Hilbert space. The second solution is that when we work with the second constraint, we should still, after finding all the solutions, we should still look for some kind of irreducible vectors in some sense. I think that this kind of analysis is useful from the point of view of the full theory, because this is the way we believe we can solve the scalar constraint in the full theory by doing spectral decomposition and choosing the Hilbert space corresponding to the zero eigenvalue. So that's why it's good to understand in this figure, however not as we see so. Okay, so I have come to the end of my talk. If there are questions about this part or about other parts, please ask.
Well, Jurek Dzisabaj, one of the things that Pawłowski has, and maybe other people has shown, is to me a very surprising result, which was that in this last part, with the positive cosmology and constant.
Abba, is it possible for you to speak closer to the microphone? Or?
Yes, thank you. Is this better?
Not much. Maybe it's us. I don't know.
Okay. So, I will be really close. Is this better?
No.
Okay. I don't know what to do. So, I will just speak slowly. Hope that you will understand.
Okay.
So, if you look at positive cosmological constant case, then there are distinct self-adjoint extensions if the constraint is the first equation on your transparency 16. So at first I thought, talking to mathematicians here, that that meant that if I take distinct, you take one extension and I take another, then if when I do the evolution with respect to it, these evolutions would be dramatically, can be dramatically different. And then there is a real, real problem. However, these various numerical simulations have shown, and maybe Tomáš has also an analytical argument, I do not know, that the evolutions are in fact indistinguishable. So this ambiguity of self-adjoint extension, which I always thought, again because of talking to mathematician, as being a very serious thing that will affect all physics, does not seem to affect at all expectation values of the density and expectation value of the P phi operator, or if you like, expectation value of P phi and expectation value of the volume operator, the two Dirac observables that we have. And to me, I mean, I do not understand the deep significance of this, but if the conjecture that Pawlowski and Kaminsky are making is correct, then I go halfway to understanding it, because it is like saying that there is really a superselection, and just like with epsilon lattice, there is also superselection, and of course the microscopic observations will depend on which lattice you choose. For semi-classical states, it does not depend on which lattice you choose. So maybe similarly, there is another superselection, and maybe for semi-classical states, it does not depend on, the evolution does not depend on which particular superselection sector you choose. I do not know. So I just wanted to say that there's a very nice result of Pawlowski's, namely insensitivity to the choice of self-adjoint extension as far as Dirac observables are concerned.
So one possible, a very possible way of conceivable case which would lead to this ambiguity would be that physical time becomes infinite when this parameter of evolution is still finite, and then it would mean that as far as physical time is concerned, we know what happens, but what we don't know is what happens afterwards. But I'm not sure if this is the case in this case. Maybe if Tomáš is around and if he knows, maybe he will tell us. But I'm not sure if he's around because he travels these days.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, this is Tomáš. Can you repeat your comments?
So my suspicion was that if we have unitary evolution and the parameter of evolution goes beyond analytically, beyond geodetically complete spacetime, then it is not surprised that the evolution is not any longer well defined. But the question is whether this is the case here, if a cosmological constant is greater than zero.
No.
Okay. So in this case, if we just take into account the physical quantities, like the expectation values of energy density, or the trajectory of the state, then the evolution is not ambiguous.
I see, as a bias.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think generally, if you look at examples of particles moving in potentials and so on, the ambiguity is not just what happens after the reflection at infinity. The ambiguity is even when the particle is rolling down the potential. The ambiguity in the self adjoint extensions. So I think it has not much to do with what happens, so to say, at infinity. Okay, I have another comment since I have the microphone, which has to do with your k equal to 1 model. I do not remember all the calculations, but one cannot just take the final result and substitute for L0 some other value. You have to go back. The reason why L0 was chosen equal to 2 was because in that case, the standard Karta structure equations are compatible with the commutation relations satisfied by the right and left invariant vector fields. This is a technical point, but I just want to say that Martin and I really were confused about this for a long time, and finally we understood that there is a delicate balance. And if you do not use L0 equal to 2, then you have to be very careful with respect to the holonomy calculation that was done. So I just wanted to say that it may be that there is an inequivalence for different choices of L0, but that calculation has to be done from scratch and not just substitute a value for L0, which is different from 2. Yeah.
I'm sorry to ask again, but we can't hear anything in Potsdam.
I'm trying my best. I'm very close, very far, everything. I do not know what's wrong with the microphone today. I just can't help. Maybe we should just stop the discussion, maybe. I don't know.
Are there any other questions?
I only want to add that I could hear Abai very well, and I could hear Bianca even better.
Okay, let's thank you then.
So we start again next fall, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, we'll start again next fall.
Change their logic would even change their classical story.